president of the local chapter of AARP, and as a delegate to the state council of AARP, and as our representative at the national convention of the American Association of University Professors. Because of my close affiliation with AAUP then, I am partisan, and I should preface anything that I say about any organization by declaring my partisanship. I am still active with the AAUP and edit a small informal memo which is intended to circulate the information about the four college activities to our faculty and vice versa. With reference to your question about thinking of the AFT in terms of salaries and conditions of employment, the AAUP in terms of quality of education, I would say you cannot really have one without the other. The crying need exists for a larger number of full-time faculty on this campus, and I think this is one of our most pressing needs right now. The increase in class size from 25 to 75 does indeed reflect a smaller number of faculty for the number of students that we serve. And if we are to maintain and improve, I would say if we are simply to maintain quality of education at Westcon, yes, we need more full-time faculty members. I don't believe the AFT would find itself in opposition to the AAUP on going after an increase in numbers of faculty members, including specialists in various areas, in order to do that which the state has indicated we should do.
Yes.
I don't think, as a corollary to this, I don't think that the AAUP can ignore the fact that, I don't think it would want to ignore the fact that faculty members presently employed as part-timers receive the proverbial pittance in pay, and that those who are working full-time in the instructors and assistant professors ranks are probably below the median income for families in the Danbury area. Certainly, they would be below the median income for the entire Fairfield County, Westchester County area.
The median income for employed workers, you say?
Median family income.
Median family.
Figures like these can be obtained from the publication of the Union Trust Company. And if you take our median salary at this college and compare it with the median household income, family income, for Fairfield County, find that our figure is lower, our median income, median salary at Westcon, is lower than the median family income around and about. Now, there are several ways in which this thing can be balanced up. My way to balance it up is to find a job for my wife. For those who, because of various circumstances, have one income only, the salary conditions for instructors and assistant professors must be intolerable. I don't see how they can do it if they have families of any size, if they have any family at all.
Would the implication be that for the instructor or assistant associate, whatever, at the college, that it is less likely that there will be other breadwinners than...
Come again?
Is it less... Would the implication be that for whatever reasons, the instructor, the professor, the in-between levels at the college would be less likely to have other earners in the family?
No.
Than in other work areas?
What I'm suggesting is that I don't believe an instructor or assistant professor with our present salary scale could provide for a family on that salary alone. Rather than make generalizations about others, let me cite my own experience. That I was a moonlighter for 19 years while working here. I stopped moonlighting in 1969 on my doctor's orders, my MD's orders, that I should no longer be a moonlighter because my health would not allow me to. I do not know the individual circumstances of any other faculty member.
Yes.
I shouldn't discuss other faculty member situations too closely.
I think it's peripheral. I just didn't understand your use of the individual.
The only figures that are available.
In relation to household income.
Right.
Well, and then as I started, your involvement, I think I consider it clarified, stems from an interest in this means of providing a higher quality or the highest possible quality of
I would hope that the whole faculty would be able to give its full attention to teaching on this campus. Mm-hmm. I was lucky in that my moonlighting was job-related. I could do the same kind of thing that I do for the college and do it off-campus and draw additional pay for doing my kind of work in teaching privately. I'm not certain that that would apply in all cases, but I do think that the state must provide salaries to its faculty members that will enable them to devote a major portion of their attention to the kind of work in which they are specialists.
But you've seen change, as we've discussed briefly, campus size of faculty, certainly size of student body. You've lived through what it seems to me, and when I say lived through, I mean in terms of association with the school, what it seems to me thus far must have been its most exciting period, the period of the 50s. I may be wrong on this, of course, but it's my present bias. That the 50s saw change on the way. It saw such things as the interim program due day, which must have been unique, until I find otherwise, among American colleges. I have yet to talk to Dr. Greenwald concerning, just some sentences he dropped at lunch concerning the establishment of interdisciplinary programs. And some feeling of frustration that I gather he still feels concerning them. Talking to Dr. Brown the other day, said, let me look in my closet, and sure enough, she brought out something called Monuments of Culture.
Yes.
These, she spoke of, in terms of pride, our long association with the school, and I guess she said along about the end of the 1950s decade, one could not have visited anywhere in the United States where normal schools were discussed state teachers' colleges were discussed without our school being singled out as remarkable for the independence, the innovation, the unique quality of members of its programs. So, as I say, this is the impression I have of the period that saw you as a young man coming to this institution.
Well, the 1950s were exciting. So were the 1960s. The most rapid growth of the colleges, of this college, occurred. You can check out the statistics on this. I believe that the most rapid growth of the college occurred in the 1960s. Now we are in a time of budget freeze. And we must thaw that out, but what changes are to come, we don't know. I'm not nostalgic for the 50s. I do not share in the happy days view that the way we were was the way to be. Yes, this college had distinction among colleges of teacher education. We were first in many kinds of things. As we go into more areas of educational service, we are bound to be approaching fields in which we do not have that long background. The three programs that strike me as being among the newer programs here would be the nursing education program, the business administration program, the criminal justice program. I would be very much surprised if a brand new program at this college would immediately stand first in the country. But I don't think I don't think you can go home again. Thomas Wolfe was right. We could not become a single-purpose college again because you could not get our diverse student population to agree on what our single purpose should be. The youngsters of the 1970s have almost as many different ways to go as there are students. Question is to pick out a central drive, and that is going to be a problem for President Bercy and for Dr. Brown too.
Well, this actually is what I was leading up to and what may very well be almost my last question. The 50s, an exciting time as I see it, exciting because change was occurring. It was a change toward something other than the single purpose institution. It seems to me that such programs as I've mentioned must, to whatever degree, reflect a concern, but as we grow larger, let's keep the values we had while we were smaller, the quality we had, and this, of course,
you can't let the quality go.
And what I was leading up to would be the quality of today's student, in relation to the quality of student that you've seen, well, here for some 25 years, particularly with the emphasis on perhaps even the kinds of programs you've mentioned. I'm going to Westcon to become a nurse. I'm going to Westcon to become a medical technician, a policeman, whatever. Have we lost the liberal arts glow that perhaps was glowing in the early 1960s?
There would be many people in liberal arts who would feel that the arrival of a new program was an encroachment.
On something other than teacher education and encroachment?
No, I'm thinking that the liberal arts people would feel that nursing education, business administration, criminal justice are an encroachment on the liberal arts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there are very many people who are thinking only in terms of teacher education anymore. I don't think that quality of the individual student has suffered. What I do notice is an extraordinary range of capabilities. I did a statistical study in the early 1950s, which rather startled me in its homogeneity. We did indeed have minimum standards for entrance to the college.
In the 50s?
Yes. There was a very small spread in the range of abilities which can be indicated on nationally standardized tests, possibly because most of the students were from one area, they'd gone to the same schools, they were in the same college program, they were, with all due respect, they were very much like each other. Now, God bless them, we have many different kinds of students of many different levels of capability. And without doing any statistical analysis at all, I would bet you a cup of coffee that an analysis of our entrance scores would show both lower scores and higher scores.
What kinds of scores?
I'm not going to quote.
SATs, this sort of thing, you mean?
Yes, this sort of thing. Intelligence tests, any measuring data that you use, they would show lower scores and higher scores. What I see is greater diversity, an extraordinary range of capabilities. This is going to be frustrating to some of the people in established liberal arts programs and in established programs of teacher education, because they will have to deal with not just one kind of cat, but with more cats than there are supposed to have been in Kilkenny. I find it a problem when I deal with a large class, like the one that I came from this morning, where there are approximately 80 students. Now, I know that at least a dozen of those students are racing and chasing through those course materials faster than I could easily keep up with them. That there must be at least a dozen who will have difficulty understanding the bases for the stories and poems and plays that we're talking about. And there would be a very large number in the middle who could handle this material better if we were able to deal with them in smaller classes. The problem in trying to cope with 80 students at a time is not that some of them cannot make it at all, not that some of them are superb the day they walk into the course, not that some of them are everyday students, but a mere recognition on my part as to which ones need special help and which ones I'll have to sprint to catch.
The problem, first of all, of such recognition given the large numbers, and then even if you could recognize, what could you do about it?
Yeah, right. But the look backward at the way we were can sometimes be a little bit startling if you take a close look. I remember some of the students who seemed to me so outstanding when I was in Hamilton College in the class of 38. And then I remember looking at some of their writing in the Alumni News later on and wondering whether these were indeed the fellows whom I had considered so highly literate way back then.
And they had forgotten as much.
the problem of the problem writer is with us now, no question about it. That's why Mr. Bulbles and Mrs. Cox and others have started a writing laboratory to help those students from any course area who don't seem to be able to put the content of their thoughts together well enough to express it in writing. And a brand new thing has been passed recently by the College Senate to the effect that a faculty member may withhold a mark in any content course until a student has brought up to par his ability to communicate his thoughts in decent English. We recognize that we have this problem now. I suspect that we have always had it. Because I think that there were students who had difficulty in writing in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, judging by my own experience with other colleges and with my own undergraduate program, that there were students in the 1940s and way on back in the 1930s who did not write as well as we might think that they have written. If we were to take a look at their writing now, we might be appalled.
My mind has gone back.
Paul Linowitz was almost certainly a public high school graduate when he came to Hamilton College. He was the valedictorian of his class.
The Xerox.
And I don't know what he's into now, but he was president
anything
of Xerox.
Anything he wants.
Well, I can't generalize about the private secondary schools or colleges because I devoted myself to public education. I don't know.
I mention it only because it brought back recollection.
Yeah.
And because I have the feeling from my talk with you that there is a certain amount of what we can unabashedly call love on your part for the school.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly something that I'm conscious of feeling myself in my short association with it. Last Thursday, a holiday, Don Groff and I hadn't been able to get together any other time, so he said, well, come on over to my house in Brookfield, and we had a chat. And Don impressed me, as Herb Janik and numbers of others have, as he talked with his individual concern for students, the tailoring of the program according to what the young man's or young woman's interest is in earth science, which, given the numbers that have impressed me just being around the school, seemed to be laudable and had to reflect some affection.
That is going to be a hard thing to maintain. We have to invent ways, if necessary, to maintain that individual contact with the students, to know which ones need which kind of help, and which ones simply need support in their projects and their goals. If we were to lose that, then I would become nostalgic.
I see. But you will work to see that.
I will hope that we can win the ever-present struggle to keep the faculty in proper ratio to the students. Mm-hmm. Well, we can do the job that we were hired to do.
I think that covers just about everything I could think of. In general, as I said at the beginning, my great concern is that my questions will be too specific, but you've been marvelous at giving me the recollection and viewpoint you have. Should there be anything else that I find I've missed, I'll come back. And meanwhile, I'll be happy now to say hi, Dr. Tufts, or perhaps even hi, John, as we see each other on the campus. Thanks very much.
Oh.